drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. Making a living out of photography in films can be challenging and practically impossible for most people, so many just give up. Not John Frank. For two decades, he's used his camera to capture startling moments on water and land to show us just how beautiful, fragile, and powerful life can be. Dr. Leah Barclay has a fascination with water too. She's a sound artist who combines her love of science with art by dipping microphones into water or hoisting them up in the air to document the changing sounds in precious ecosystems. Her work has been exhibited at the Smithsonian, UNESCO, and even the Eiffel Tower. John and Leah are my guests in the drawing room. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John Frank, you made a name for yourself by giving ordinary people the chance to see what surfers experience on the water, which is great because, you know, I can't get up on a surfboard. What was it about surfing and waves that was so interesting for you?
I was a teenager. I left school pretty early. And my friends were all sort of heading on the pathway towards university, and I just wanted to surf. So I worked pretty crappy jobs at night in factories and did whatever I could to just spend time in the ocean. And a lot of the time I was surfing by myself because all my friends were busy, you know, forging their careers and their learning, their educational pathways. And I had this window where I'd just see incredible things in the ocean, and I guess I just got to a point where I thought I'd better try and capture some of those moments.
Were you one of the few water photographers at the time?
Back then, in the early 90s, there weren't a lot of people shooting surfing. It was a pretty tight group. It's been happening since the 50s and 60s. There's quite a history of surfing photography, particularly in Australia, but it was always a pretty tight group compared to today. So I really just got my start. I walked into the editorial offices of a surfing magazine and laid down some slides in front of the editor, and he liked what he saw, and they gave me some rolls of film and sent me off, and that was it.
So talk me through the process of taking these photos of surfers or waves, of these kind of amazing action shots. What do you arm yourself with, and how do you do it? I imagine it's kind of dangerous and there's a lot of coordination going on. Like, walk me through the logistics.
Yeah, technically it's challenging. It certainly was in the early days with film. But basically you're just armed with a pair of flippers or swim fins and a waterproof camera. And I did all my work in the water because, being a surfer, that was the biggest part of the thrill for me, was just being in the ocean. So it was never about standing on the beach with a long lens. It was always just about getting out in the waves and feeling good when you get out of the water as well, just even if you don't get any good pictures.
Not to reveal my obsessions, but I will. Have you ever found yourself in danger?
I used to shoot a lot of big wave stuff back in the early days when I was younger and fitter. And there's surfers, there's always times when they feel like they're out of their depth, pardon the pun, but there's been plenty of times where I've wondered, you know, how I was going to make it back to shore. But fat floats, and you just hope that you're going to get washed in.
You just hope. I love that. It's heroic. John, I'll get back to your land-based work a little later because I want to bring in Dr. Leah Barclay, who also likes to work underwater. Last year, she played some of her field recordings to crowds at a festival on the Sunshine Coast. Leah, tell me about the project. What did you do, and what did people see and hear?
So this was a project for Horizon Festival on the Sunshine Coast, and what I wanted to do was bring together this decade-long database of underwater recordings. So we essentially built a custom venue on Mooloolaba Beach, which was a geodesic dome with full surround sound, so 8-channel surround sound that brought in live hydrophones, so underwater microphones, and then mixed this database of recordings from underwater environments across the planet. And this was accompanied by a series of augmented reality sound walks as well. So all the sounds were accessible via a mobile phone app that you could download and then basically walk along the waterways of the Sunshine Coast, so along Cotton Tree and Maroochydore River and Mooloolaba Beach, and we sort of built these tools into the app where the sounds would move with the tides. So you actually had to take your shoes off and put your feet in the water to be able to listen to the sounds. So it was basically all about, you know, connecting the community to these aquatic ecosystems and thinking about these soundscapes beneath the surface that we don't traditionally have access to.
Let's have a listen to some of the sounds people heard. And here's another example of what they heard once you did some sound mixing. I've got to say, I feel like you've transported me deep into the ocean. How did people react when they heard those sounds?
I mean, mostly pretty positively. Obviously, some of the sounds are, you know, quite confronting to listen to. It's not what we would traditionally associate with a concert of live music. You know, those first sounds we heard were the crackling and popping of snapping shrimp at the river mouth and then passing humpback whales, but also some of the sounds of distant ships mix in there as well. So I guess it's not the traditional sort of concert experience, but I think, you know, what's really important about exposing communities to these recordings is it sort of, you know, reveals that aquatic ecosystems are really acoustic environments. They're worlds of sound, and you know, we don't always understand how sound works in these aquatic ecosystems, so it's always fascinating to see and hear how communities respond to that when they're immersed in these rich and dynamic underwater environments.
It's funny you talked about the crackling. It's meant to be water, but it sounds to me like fire.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating how many people say that. I mean, it's basically the snapping shrimp popping a bubble, so emitting with their claws a really fast bubble that pops, that creates that clicking and popping sound. And I mean, I love it. I think it's this sort of rhythmically complex and beautiful soundscape. A lot of the scientists I work with find it challenging because it interferes with a lot of the species that we're studying in these aquatic environments.
I'd love to get your view on that, John. Does that what it sound like when you come and fall off your surfboard and you get under there?
Yeah, that's interesting, Patricia, because it took me immediately to a place where diving under big waves in Hawaii, one of my favourite places to shoot, there's boulders and rocks on the sea floor, and when it's particularly large swell, you can hear them banging into each other, and it's just this incredibly symphonic mixture of bubbles and the sound inside your own head that the water makes, and then the clanging of these rocks, huge boulders sort of banging into each other. And it took me straight there.
Wow. We took you to Hawaii.
Yeah.
I got to say, I find that such a terrifying idea, but also completely mesmerizing. So, Dr. Leah Barclay, was it just the sounds of local aquatic ecosystems that you played at the festival, or did you include sounds from further afield?
No, definitely sounds from further afield. So, I mean, I've been really lucky to work in different ecosystems across the planet. There was actually some sounds from Hawaii in there as well, some humpback whales from Hawaii. There were sounds from the Amazon River, pink river dolphins, and there was various sounds from throughout Europe as well, particularly freshwater ecosystems, these soundscapes that we don't traditionally think about. You know, I'm sure we're all quite familiar with the sounds of marine environments, humpback whales or dolphins, for example, but not as familiar as these sort of incredibly complex macro invertebrates in river systems that are, you know, very different all across the planet. So it was also about bringing in these soundscapes of global aquatic ecosystems and really showcasing the dramatic changes in biodiversity of freshwater ecosystems across the planet.
This is The Drawing Room on RN, and my guests are Dr. Leah Barclay, a visual artist, and John Frank, who's a photographer and a surfer and an artist, talking about their work. Why do you want to bring these sounds to audiences, Leah?
I mean, for me, it's really about bringing a wider attention and awareness to what's happening in this planet at this point in time. We're obviously in a really critical time frame in history where we have to make decisions quickly and take action. And, you know, the impacts of climate change are very visible in terrestrial environments. You know, we can see and hear the changes in the trees. We can see the horrific impact of fires across Australia at the moment. But these changes in freshwater and marine environments aren't that readily visible. So for me, sound gives us access to this non-invasive and other way of understanding these environments. So we're using these soundscapes to monitor biodiversity and create these baselines, but they also offer us this sort of rich and embodied way to connect with these ecosystems. So this sort of material is accessible for young people to stand there with a hydrophone in the river system and connect to the river in a way they haven't been able to before, and to bring all this material into a concert environment or an installation environment. It's really about bringing an attention to these aquatic ecosystems that inspires communities to take action.
John, in 1996, you made a movie about surfing called Litmus, and that essentially, I understand, opened up a new career path for you. It took you out of the water and onto the land, and it led to collaborations with some of this country's most talented artists. Tell me about the work that it led to. I know that you worked with the Australian Chamber Orchestra, went around the world. Tell me about the work that then developed.
Yeah, well, the surf photography has been described as starvation on the road to madness, and I think what I take from that is it's every surf photographer I know that's worked really hard at making a career from it has to do something else to supplement their income. So for me, it was video, and I transitioned into shooting that film, Litmus, in 96. And then from there, a lot of my workload, probably 50% of what I ended up doing was motion picture work. I've worked a lot with Richard Tognetti, a keen surfer from the ACO. We've collaborated on about 5 concerts, I believe. The first one we did was surf-related, but then since then they've sort of branched out and we've covered a whole bunch of different topics.
Talk to me about those topics. What have you tried to do in your work? What kind of topics have you tried to traverse?
Well, we did one called Nothing that was essentially
intriguing.
About nothing. Yeah, so that was tricky.
Was that interesting to do something about nothing? I love it. It's like a Seinfeld episode.
I know. It was classic Richard. He just was sitting, we were having dinner one night, and he just said, right, the next one we're going to do is it's going to be called Nothing. So off you go. And I went away and I ended up just filming all these sort of random scenes in my head. But it's difficult to explain the creative process for me because I'm very much reactionary in what I'm finding in my everyday life. So I'm not great at planning things in advance. I kind of prefer to just approach any new work by just getting out in the world and sort of reacting to what's in front of me. And I find that works really well because I could never make up some of the stuff that I find in the streets and in the world. I just couldn't. I'm not that imaginative. It's all there in front of us. We just need to kind of, for me, I need to collate it and then make sense of it later.
Leah, you've had the privilege of exhibiting your work at some incredible places, including the Eiffel Tower and Times Square. Tell me about the pathway to getting, I mean, you've got to tell me the Eiffel Tower story at the very least. That's amazing.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the Eiffel Tower project was for COP21 in Paris, and it was part of the Art COP program. And it really sort of evolved from a conversation in New York, actually, around some of the work we were doing with mapping the changing soundscapes of the Amazon rainforest. So the sounds beneath the surface of the Amazon River, but also all the sounds of the forest from sort of forest floor to canopy. And it sort of struck me when I was doing a lot of these recordings in the Amazon that there were these really distinctive soundscapes. You know, we could sort of bury the hydrophones and geophones at the, you know, on the riverbank and hear the clicking and popping of the tree roots as well. And as we moved up through those sort of 4 distinctive layers of tropical rainforest vegetation, the soundscapes changed so dramatically. And, you know, when we were talking about work for COP21, it sort of struck me that we could map those four distinctive layers of tropical rainforest vegetation over each of the four platforms of the Eiffel Tower. And that was essentially the idea of the project. And we developed a mobile app where you could essentially go up and down the Eiffel Tower and listen to those changing soundscapes of the Amazon rainforest. So essentially laying this map of the Amazon over the Eiffel Tower. And the idea was sort of, you know, again, to bring these soundscapes to the forefront of decision makers who were sitting around tables talking about the future of the Amazon rainforest and hadn't necessarily been there or experienced it or felt the way it feels to stand in the middle of that intense acoustic environment and just listen to that rich biodiversity. So it was really about using sound as a call to action and, you know, that idea of mapping the four layers over the Eiffel Tower just seemed like a beautiful poetic statement as well.
How did people react?
It was a challenging situation because there was obviously a lot happening at COP and not everyone wanted to go up and down the Eiffel Tower either. But certainly the people that did experience it were quite moved by the fact that the soundscapes were brought to Paris. And we were really lucky to work with a lot of collaborators as well and weave voices throughout these soundscapes. So I'm quite privileged to work with a lot of Indigenous collaborators in parts of the world. And there were communities in Vanuatu and the central Amazon who chose not to travel to COP because of the impact of their carbon footprint to go to this conference to talk about climate change. So by weaving their voices into this installation, we were able to have their presence there.
And John, talk to me about On Bones, this book. What was the inspiration for the book and how did you develop it?
Well, the inspiration was the end of the millennium, I guess. Documenting the end of the millennium is a pretty absurd proposition. Yeah. So
it's not about nothing, though.
It's not about nothing, but there was a lot of nothing in it. And what ended up happening was I decided to travel to six different countries during the last 6 weeks of 1999. Not technically the end of the millennium, but for all intents and purposes, it was. Calcutta, Jerusalem, Moscow, Lagos, Bogota, and ending up in New York. And for me, it was sort of reference to time. I mean, time is made up. It's the natural world had no sort of, we didn't care that the clocks were ticking over and they never have. But for human beings, it was an important sort of point in the timeline there that people might be able to remember. So I took that really specific point in time that everyone that was around can remember where they were in 1999, and I just wanted to take a snapshot of different corners of the world with little strategy. So I just sort of walked all day every day with a camera and photographed in these different places, and what I ended up with was On Bones.
Wow, to be you, John. And now you're working at a remote Indigenous community in the Northern Territory. In what capacity? What are you doing?
Yeah, I just finished up, actually, but I've just done a year up in the Tanami Desert working as a video producer for an Aboriginal media organisation. And that was an incredible privilege. And I've learnt so much about our First Nations people. And I've learned a lot about my own upbringing. Mm. In white Australia, suburban white Australia and the Sutherland Shire, there was big gaps in my knowledge of the history of this country that have now been filled.
Mm, there are big gaps in many of our knowledge, I think. And
we've got a ways to go.
We do, and we have some gaps to be filling and listening. It's all about listening. Dr. Leah Barclay, what's next for you? I mean, I've got to say, your soundscapes are incredible. What are you working on next?
I'm actually about to jump on a plane to France, and I'm running a workshop, an eco-acoustics workshop, and then I head over to the US to do some work over there comparing some coastal soundscapes. Then I'm back here in Australia working on a big project called River Listening, which is supported by the Australia Council for the Arts, and we're doing some major outcomes for that as part of the Floating Land Festival on the Sunshine Coast in October.
Fantastic. Hey, guys, thank you so much for coming into the drawing room.
Thank you so much for having us. Yeah, thank you.
My guests in the drawing room have been sound artist Dr. Leah Barclay and visual artist John Frank.